black man. I don't care what false doctrine. I don't care about no Hebrew Israelite. We know that Jesus was not a black man. So we know that Jesus was not a black man. I don't care what false doctrine. I don't care about no Hebrew Israelite. We know that Jesus was not a black man.
Shout out to Candace on this one, who was in the comments section. And this is what Candace said. When listening to this and reading your comments, I was led to Romans 14, most specifically verses 5 through 10. I'm usually not one for policing someone's tone, but I will say when it comes to Pastor Philip, he is one of God's anointed. And despite how you may feel about him or this topic, you should fear God enough to speak on him with respect. I don't have no respect for him. I don't have respect for anyone who raises himself up to tell his congregation, unawakened Israelites, that Yahusha was not black. And in the fact that he says he doesn't care about no Hebrew Israelite as if this is a religion. It is a bloodline. And that's what you should start understanding. And I don't know if you are a bot or you're a real person, but I've noticed that in the last couple of weeks, people are trying to defend him because they love his passion, his charisma. And that's what's leading most of you Negroes into the pit. Y'all see things with your eyes and never with the word of the Most High. You see things with your flesh and never the Ruach of the Most High. All you have to do is hear his doctrine. Research him a little bit to find out he is not who he says he is. A brother emailed me in some context, said that the building that he wanted, he overcharged or he overasked for the asking price, which means he wanted offering that exceeded what the building was actually worth. He even sent me pictures, text messages between a person who knows or a person who has his feet on the ground out there that said that he was just lying to his congregation to get more money. If he only got $250,000 for another weak prophetic preacher, he's still not even halfway there of buying or owning that building. He's telling everybody it was worth millions. Another building he said that he was going to buy from the Jews, which I don't know why he felt that he needed to mention that. He said that the Jews were going to give him a building for $500,000. So he's still not halfway there. I don't see any plans of them moving. How are they still allowed to be in that building if he only had $250,000? Is that just for the rent? Or he's waiting for this shopping center to be built? That's maybe years out. But if you go to his website, this is what he says on his website. Since my return from Israel and the encounter I had with God there in December of 2018, you know that's a lie. The Most High encountering no Christian pastor, especially a Christian pastor that had went to get his seminary degree or his theology degree from a Christian college. That means he is set aside to preach a doctrine that goes against or to pervert or manipulate the true doctrine which was given and handed down to us through Yahusha and many of the other prophets. So how is this God's anointed? And the fact that you still calling him God shows me your ignorance and knowing who the Father's name is. Constant brokenness over the state of the church in America has been my portion. You think the Most High's portion is to defend, raise up, and build up churches in America? Oh, because you misread a mistranslation of the word assembly, which the Greeks translated into Circe, a Greek goddess, and then they changed that to church? That's what you're talking about? You're talking about that American church? The American church that had been set up by Edom, the Most High's most hated enemy of all in Scripture, that constantly reminds us in different parts of prophecy that Edom, Esau, Idumea, Rome, America will fall, will be destroyed, will be desolate. The children of Yehuda and the Yasharel will inhabit their kingdom. that their world ends and our world will begin? You think American churches are going to be factored into this equation? The perversion of the faith in the West, our growing lack of reverence, and our overt mockery of Christ moves me to deep grief. And he literally just said that Jesus was not a black man. Now, he could be talking about the Roman Catholic sun god Jesus, which, yes, he is right. But you're using scripture to validate that Yahushua's name is Jesus and that Yahushua is white. That's what you're trying to validate, because you're connecting a Roman pagan sun god to scripture and have been doing so in your to your congregation. Weeping in earnest prayers and on emboldened witness to be unwavering voice for change. The veneration of holy God and the preservation of biblical Christianity. I don't know why people say that. There's no such thing as biblical Christianity. Christianity is not even biblical. So I fear the Most High enough to know who is really getting messages from him and who he told me to test as far as their ruach. So again, I'm going to say this to you. I do not fear that coward. I don't fear you. I don't fear what you may say or what you may do. Your prayers are going to be hindered or will be having the chance to be hindered if you continue to defend someone that is showing outright blasphemy against the Ruach HaKodesh and the fact that Yahushua is of a different heritage and a different ethnicity. If you can't figure that part out, then you're completely dumb and you're just walking into the pit yourself. But like I said, I get it. Everybody or every platform that have a comment section, people feel the need to have to comment on it. Especially when you don't know what you're talking about. Now, this whole Super Bowl thing, I'm going to start with the Kanye ad. This is what I've noticed in the last, I think the last 6 years or since I've been awakened, really, and I paid attention to it. I've noticed every Black History Month and around Martin Luther King's birthday, there's always been some type of false flag ritual that brings in Jews, World War II, Nazi, fascism, and the Holocaust. That's what I've been seeing for the last six or so years. Every time, it has never ceased to fail. There's always some ritual around Jews. Why? Because they want you to equate their struggle with your struggle. And not knowing that these people are the ones who owned the slave ships. They are the ones who also fought for the Confederacy. There's a book called Jews for the Confederacy, or Confederate Jews, I think it's called. I want to say Mike Rosen was the author. I'm off the top of my head. I can't remember. But I know it's a book out. They had or owned most of the plantations. If you look up the old bills, the old wanted posters, the old auctioning posters, they have Jewish names. The ships that brought you Negroes over here also had Jewish names and had Jewish owners. This is mentioned in the records of Congress. A swift Google can show you this information. But every year, this is what happens. So, of course, they use their prized puppet, their prized coon, to tell the world all this unnecessary business that no one asked for, and it's always surrounding by Jews and Hitler. Germany don't even mention Hitler this much. But anytime you see these type of rituals or psyops, you know it's by Ashkenazi Jews, because they're the only ones, or they're the only people that try to validate their significance in scripture and in that fake land over there constantly. And we know they own the record companies. They own most of the social media platforms or control most of the social media platforms. So it really makes no sense to me that people are really whining all over social media about canceling Kanye when you don't understand behind Kanye, it is the synagogue of Satan. You're going to try to tell me a Super Bowl ad, which directs to his website, that only had one shirt on it, that the people who are the people who sit on the committee of Super Bowl ads, you tried to tell me they didn't do their due diligence and did not research what was on this website. You're trying to tell me that. You're trying to tell me a company that takes Super Bowl commercials very serious because it's dollars and millions and it's just everything is all in there for programming. You're trying to tell me they allow Kanye West sitting in a dental chair, getting a grill with fangs. You're trying to tell me they let that slip by and do no research, did no background checks, especially when you know his attitude towards Jews and you know his ability to pop off at any given moment. You chance that and say, you know what, let's run this ad and don't look at what he's selling on his website. That's what you're telling him. That's what you think or believe. And you're also trying to tell me the companies and the corporations that decide on what Super Bowl ads get featured and where they get featured, it's not alone that they're going to accept them. They have to place where during the Super Bowl that they're going to show these commercials. They have to make sure everything gels. They have to make sure everything is programmed. You trying to tell me they didn't go check that website to see if he was selling a swastika? To make sure it aligned with the other commercials with it, whatever crap they were selling? And you also going to tell me out of the companies and corporations that decide on these ads and where to place them and what order, you trying to tell me no Jews work in these businesses, that no Jews work in these corporations? You trying to tell me they can run the music industry, but when it comes to Super Bowl ads, and there are none in the workplace? That's what you truly believe. So, of course, I know it's a psyop. It always gets movement when you see a lot of complaining from you-know-whos. So I saw this one verse. I'm not wrong verse. I saw this this Instagram post from Hen Mazzig, HenMazzig. That's his Twitter and his Instagram. It says, so many people don't recognize how prevalent hatred of Jews is today because it's not aimed at you. Jews see it because we experience it. Believe us. You should not have to see a body count to realize anti-Semitism is real and it kills. Too many brush off Kanye's anti-Semitism, telling us to ignore it or he's just being crazy. This is the exact problem. In 2022, he inspired 30 anti-Semitic incidents. His words lead to real violence against us. Take his Jew hatred as seriously as you would any other bigotry. During Black History Month, now, mind you, 30 anti-Semitic incidents, 30. Did they lead in death? Did they lead in a school mass shooting? Did it lead into a Black grocery store? Where did it lead? This is hilarious to me. Because this is the whole point of them mocking Black History Month, is to interject them so then you Negroes go run around fighting their battles. That's the whole point of the whole Kanye psyop, is to get Black folks, some who are on his side, who love everything he says, love everything he does, gets them to agitate and create little, you know, terrorist cells of Kanye believers who actually don't mind Hitler, who think it's funny, cool. But majority of Black people don't care. Majority was more concerned of the fact that he said F Virgil than anything else. And the fact that he called Puff a great dad in the Free Puff. But this is just their insecurity. And this is where people get their insecurity and get their victim card. Regardless if they believe it or not or want to believe it or not, it comes from somewhere. If over time you're programmed, you've been around these people for so long, for decades, being around these people, one thing you do know is they'll throw that Holocaust card out, that victim card. And that victim card is not just out of their mouths. That victim card is on all social media platforms. That victim card is on all mainstream media. And that victim card trickles down. That insecurity trickles down. The fear of they don't want Negroes in this country to wake up to who they are and start going at them, just really their people on the street, saying you're not the real people, posting you're not the real people, acting and knowing they're not the real people. So their insecurity is going to catch up with them because that's why they joined themselves in Black History Month. They joined themselves in Negro Affairs and been doing so since the Civil Rights Movement. They are in fear of us knowing who we are. We have to be managed and controlled through that. That's why they steer us into Christianity. That's why they raise up false teachers, false pastors, like Pastor Philip Anthony Mitchell. There's a reason for that. It's to keep us away from our earthly birthright. It's to keep us away from our power or using our power. But they are a nation of whiners. And having a nation of whiners, you're going to absorb their weaknesses. Whether you believe it or whether you know it subconsciously or unsubconsciously, you're going to mirror their foolishness. That's where the gays get their insecurity and their victim card from. This is where you Negroes get your insecurity and your victim card from. Just like they hold on to the trauma of Holocaust, you Negroes hold on to the trauma of slavery, and then you hold on to the trauma of other things in your life. And you don't bury that victim card. You don't bury that trauma because that's who you are. And you believe this is your identity through your trauma and your victimhood. To let it go, which means you would need to rise up and actually meet who you are and supposed to be. Most people don't want to raise up and be what they're supposed to be because they love being a victim. They love being in their trauma. They love having a form of such godliness. Because they think it humbles them to have this trauma. It humbles them to be this victim. You can't attack someone to be a humble victim. It's hard to correct someone who's a humble victim. Let's go to verse Luke 7. And this is what I mean by that Yahusha mood. Luke 7, verse 30 to 32. But the Parashim and lawyers, which is funny, the Pharisees and the lawyers hang out. If you look at this country, what is most of the lawyers? Or who are most of the lawyers? What religion do they practice if they ain't practicing the Talmud? The Parashim and lawyers rejected the counsel of Elohim against themselves being not baptized of him, which in this verse is talking about Yehuchanan. And Adonai said, whereunto then shall I liken the men of this nation? And to what are they like? They are like unto children sitting in the marketplace and calling one to another and saying, we have piped unto you and ye have not danced. We have mourned to you and ye have not wept. You can say we, but I love that last one. We have mourned to you and ye have not wept. Liken this nation to children. A bunch of whining children. A bunch of boys crying wolf. And this is what they want us to do. They want us to weep after mourning to us. They want us to dance after piping to us. And this is exactly what you Negroes do all over social media, dancing. And then you fight their battles. In Cincinnati, Then everybody was all proud on TikTok and social media that some Negroes in Cincinnati were fighting the Nazis, not even knowing if they're like government people, just like a Patriot Front, how they were walking up out of U-Hauls and just showing up, walking around with their faces covered and then leaving. No one touched them or no one really went at them, but just videoing them. But it came to Cincinnati, a bunch of Nazis were on the bridge with their faces covered, just as Patriot Front, and started fighting them. I thought that was kind of stupid. Why are you niggas out there fighting Jewish battles? Every time those Nazis and those skinheads and those fascists show up, you never see not one Jew go out there and fight. But you will see Jews go out there fight Palestinians when they start protesting. You saw that over at the, I think it was Berkeley, where they were marching around, you know, Palestinians or people who were for the Palestinian side. And you saw Jews out there yelling, screaming, spitting on people. But when it came to real fascism, it came to be real Nazis in this country, they ain't nowhere to be found. And you niggas were all proud and happy that you went out there and started fighting Nazis. Got nothing to do with us. You niggas are dancing when they pipe. You weeping when they mourn to you. This is the whole point of Black History Month being muddled and mocked and watered down. That's why I say don't even participate in it. They knew what they were doing when they made Kendrick the halftime performer, because he stands for social unrest and protest rap. Now, all of a sudden, Negroes are hip to 40 Acres and a Mule. That song and that album been out a while ago. All of a sudden now, Negroes are hip to 40 Acres and a Mule. And think that's actually a political statement that's going to what? Do what for us? We didn't even get 40 Acres and a Mule. It's categorized as a broken promise. If you look it up, and AI will tell you it's a broken promise. Not everyone got 40 Acres and a Mule. When Lincoln was assassinated, the next president flipped the order and said that the Confederates can get back their land. And, you go further, I think the Most High wanted this to happen. The Most High did not want us to benefit ourselves in a land that's supposed to be our captivity and our punishment. That's why Black Wall Street was burned to the ground. That's why Rosewood happened. This is why 40 Acres and a Mule didn't happen. This is why in the Dawes Rolls, when Native Americans started taking in Negro women and having children with them, that's why the Most High made sure that you didn't get no parts of that covenant between the United States government and American Indians. So I'm not gonna argue with you simple-minded Negroes who still believe that you have some great connection to the Native American people or the five civilized tribes. I'm not gonna entertain it. Regardless of what you send me on email, I'm not entertaining that garbage. When the Most High says, I'm going to send you to a land that you know not, you are not aboriginal to a land you know not. When he says he's going to take you out of the lands of the north and all the places that he scattered you, make sure your black ass stays here. If you want to be an aboriginal, Native American, Cherokee, Chippewa, you make sure you stay here. And then when it really starts falling from the sky, go beg them on your hands and knees to stay up in their casinos. Go beg them to stay on their reservation. Go beg them to include you into their tribes. There's not been one Native American I saw online that came out and said, I'm so proud that Negroes are waking up to their Indian heritage. You can send me whatever documentary or foolishness you want to, but if it comes with no biblical scriptures, keep that nonsense to yourself and keep your mouth shut. This is the problem with the Negro community or the Negro awakened community, is the need to follow doctrine after doctrine after doctrine, following teacher after teacher after teacher. Because you need something to scratch your itching ears, you constantly try to look for more information, try to look for more wisdom, instead of looking for the person in the middle of the mirror. That's what you should be looking at. To have that Yahushua mood is to know you come from the Father, and from the Father, your wisdom, your understanding should flow from. I'm only the vessel to tell you my side of how I look at the world. We are all in this together. I'm just speaking my thoughts out loud. But everything I say and everything I investigate, my information and my understanding all comes from the Father. I don't sit and listen to like 50 other teachers or whatever catches my mood, whatever catches my fancy. I started learning real early that men are going to corrupt their sense of understanding because flesh is corrupted. It only takes 4 or 5 setbacks for people to reverse how they feel. I seen it with the brother from Thoughts, Camera, Action, and I seen it with the other brother who was from the military. A setback, a downfall, a mischeck, a stumbling block, a snare, a pit. Probably because of your own foolishness, your own desires, your own ego, your own pride, cause you to try to pervert gospel and take others with you. Even when Yahushua warned us and said, in the last days, there will be false teachers heaping themselves up for the doctrines of men, for those with itching ears. But even Paul warned us. And yet we still are in a fog about who these false teachers are. So everybody's on TikTok right now trying to make sense of this symbolism and knowledge that Kendrick Lamar was propagating for the audience and for some audience to get it and most audience to not. People are talking about, oh, it just went over your heads. He was a genius. Do you think he puts this show together himself and then just shows up halftime like, I'm going to go do my own thing? You think the NFL does not oversee what goes on in their performances, their house? It's their house. The Bread and Circus is their house. You think that they said, okay, I want Kendrick to be the halftime performer and he can do whatever he want. For the whatever allotted time that's on the field, he can do the show, whatever and however he sees it. You understand that all these shows starting to look alike? The Rihanna and Beyonce Christmas show, they've been walking down this aisle with dancers on the left and right, and they've always been in red or white. But you think Kendrick is some creative genius that created this whole entire performance himself with no oversight? Roger Goodell, that's probably a Freemason, made Jay-Z subservient to be the face of a performance. So if it all goes wry, if it's a political statement that you don't like, it goes to him. It goes to the gatekeeper, Prince Hall. Then he get a lower level Freemason like Kendrick to perform at the show. So it make it seem like it's black. And then you see the Masonic apron and the lights. Then you see the Kabbalah Tree of Life flash where SZA and Kendrick was standing during that performance. You didn't probably see it during the TV airing of it, but it was on it was online or wherever different views of the performance was posted. I saw it. What does the Masonic apron and, of course, Kabbalah and Judaism have to do with black political social unrest? People are truly ignorant to whatever they believe or whatever they see. Somebody told me I was reaching because I posted the Masonic apron. And this person does nothing but vlog vanity. When Solomon said everything is vanity, he wasn't lying. But this is why I wanted to talk about the Yahushua mood. It's a composure. It's an attitude that in the face of danger, in the face of death, in the face of mockery and punishment, knowing you did nothing wrong, knowing you walking in your purpose, is something we all should aspire to be. But emotions. Our past experiences. Because we don't know not how to walk in our purpose, because when we came into this world, we had no purpose. Our purpose was whatever the world told us we could be. That was our purpose. Whatever hurt us or kept us down, we made it our purpose to overthrow that stronghold. Whatever we were catered to or coddled to, we believe that was our purpose. And none of it had anything to do with the Most High. None of it had to do with his scriptures, his feast days, his Torah, or his commandments. We've been living in this world for far too long in our own purpose to actually have the Ruach and the understanding and strength to walk as Yahushua walked, knowing his purpose from day one. And to know what type of man this was, you have to read his parables to truly understand. Not listen to what somebody else tell you. Not listen to whatever a pastor tells you in the church. Because, of course, they're going to give you a watered-down, very soft version of a do-what-thou-wilt type of God or Messiah. So let's go to one of these parables in Luke 19, 12 to 28. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. Again, when he says these parables, he's talking about himself sometimes. And he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a message after him saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called unto him, to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Adonai, your pound has gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, well, good servant, because you have been faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities. Dang, 10 pounds? That was the most that anybody had in this parable, and it was little. Have authority over 10 cities. And the second came saying, Adonai, your pound has gained 5 pounds. And he said, likewise, to him be also over 5 cities. And another came saying, Adonai, behold, here is your pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. For I feared you, because you are an austere man, strict, stern, hard. You take up that you laid not down, and reap that you did not sow. And he said unto him, out of your own mouth will I judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore, then gave not you my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required my own with usury. And he said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound, and give it to him that has 10 pounds. And he said unto him, Adonai, he has 10 pounds. For I say unto you, that unto everyone which has shall be given, and from him that has not, even that he has, shall be taken away from him. Your soul is all you have left. If you have no money, you have nothing to offer. Your soul, your body, your flesh, that's all you have with you when you go into that grave. Even that is taken away from you. But those my enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring them hither and slay me, slay them before me. But those my enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me. Does this sound like a soft man? Does this sound like a man that says he gets us? This doesn't sound like the Jesus that the Christian church want you to believe. A man that literally told y'all and warned y'all that I will shut this door and then act like I don't even know you. you workers of iniquity, because you know of my false name, not my real name. He tells you and warns you that you will see Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and you yourselves thrust out. It don't sound like somebody who said, oh, you know what? Let me go talk to the Father real quick and see if he can let you in. He not Enoch. He's not going to treat your soul as Enoch, where Enoch, for the fallen angels, went tried to come up to the Most High and say, you know what? These angels want me to apologize to you on their behalf. And Yah stopped me. He's like, look, I already know you came up here to try to intercede on their behalf. But this is what you're going to tell them. Yahushua is not even giving you that. Yahushua is not even telling you, like, hey, if you mess up and you get to this door and you're still in your sins, just wait here. I'm going to see if I can convince my Father to let you up in here. It don't say that nowhere in Scripture. That's the type of man he is. And John 8, Yochanan 8, 1 through 4. Well, 1 through 8. Yahushua went unto the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Rabbi, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now, mind you, if they've been waiting to persecute him or to try his doctrine, wouldn't you know that they knew of this woman being an adulterer? That they must have watched and stood by as she kept going to wherever house she was going into, or bringing the man up in the house while her husband was out? They would had to know her schedule to be able to sit and wait to all of a sudden say, oh, we caught this woman in the very act. So I'm pretty sure they probably had knowledge of her already cheating, and they knew exactly at what time she was going to be cheating so they could use her to try to persecute or try the doctrine of Yahushua. This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Yahushua stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. This is a mood. Imagine you mid-argument, or imagine somebody come to you, or your enemies come to you, having a problem with what you believe, how you walk, who you are. And when they're trying to try you, you just stop what you're doing, you stoop down and start writing in the sand or writing in the dirt, or you bring out your pen and just start doodling on the ground. I'm really wanting to know, what was he writing? Was he writing, oh, these people are so crazy? Or was he doodling, or what was he actually writing? I really want to know. But I thought it was funny that he listened to what they said and acted like he didn't even hear them. It don't sound like that he gets us Jesus that everybody's talking about in this modern world or modern religions. So when they continue asking him, he lifted up himself. He said unto them, he that is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone. And again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. Yahushua's constantly showing the Sadducees and the Pharisees that they're not worth anything. This all isn't a mood. It is an act in itself. That he's showing he's not supposed to be rattled by confrontation. That his composure as is such that he's not even paying attention or in fear of the enemy that's coming. He's showing you a kind of laid back approach, that he has nothing to fear from these people. Paying them no, never mind. I really wish we could attribute this mood into our lives, because we react too much. Everything needs a reaction from us. The comment section needs a reaction. A post needs a reaction. The reaction of a reaction video. Everything is a reaction. This is based on our flesh. Not based on our ruach, it's based on our flesh. If we are to react, we shall react to righteousness and the ruach thereof, that tells us that we should reprove or reproach something. But so much of this world is set up for a reaction. That's why I say it's no mistake that people post reaction videos now. Now people post videos not saying anything, just showing the reactions of the face of what they're watching so you could laugh at the reaction and the video at the same time. It's really weird to me, but that's what people do. And reacting or overreacting to too much or being stimulated too much, you then set your endorphins, you set your dopamine levels on a path where you need a lot to react to. So you search for every little thing to react to because you're used to reacting. Busybodies. How can you ever listen to the word of Yah or listen to Yah himself if your whole mental, your emotions, your flesh is set up to react to things that you see, react to things that you feel? How can you hear the word of the Most High? How can you hear correction? How can you hear the error of your ways if you're always reacting? You're not listening. You're reacting, responding. This is something Yahushua never did, never reacted, unless he reacted by seeing those who were selling around his father's or in his father's temple. That's righteously reacting or reproving, reproaching. Another move, Luke 7, 30 to 32. No, I already did that. Luke 2:22-53. Then Yahushua said unto the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders, which will come to him, be ye come out as against a thief with swords and staffs. He's telling them, you don't even have the respect of me to try to come at me in the daytime. You try to come as a thief in the night, under the cover of darkness. When I was daily with you in the temple, ye stretched forth no hands against me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. Now, Yahushua could have said nothing, as he said little when he was arrested. Yahushua could have said nothing. He knew that this was his time. He knew that this was his hour. He even said during the Galilean wedding, his very first miracle, "What do you want with me, woman?" He was talking to his mother. "My hour has not come." He reminded his disciples, "It's not my time yet. I can be here doing this work because it's not my time yet." So when it was his time, Yahushua could have said absolutely nothing. What do you think he told his captors? "When I was daily with you in the temple, ye stretched forth no hands against me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness." And then when he was on the cross or when he was on the tree, he said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." But when it came to the Jews, when it came to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, when it came to Rome, he knew exactly who sought to kill him. So he put them on notice. He told them what they did. He told them what they would do. He told them what their power was. This is for us to learn in the future so that we don't need to be afraid of these people. We don't need to be bothering with these people, their rituals, their rites, their organizations, their psyops. They are nothing to fear. He's telling them, "You only have permission to touch me because my hour comes. And your hour is only going to come not in light, but in darkness. You have no power over the light. That's why you work in darkness. You're not the children of light. That's why you walk in darkness." I'm not going to say it was petty, but I'm saying it's a amazing comeback. He's telling them, "You don't have any power to do nothing, not even arrest me. You see me every single, you see me out here preaching in your temples, and you couldn't do nothing then. But so you think you could do something now? Unless it's only ordained that you could do something? You have to understand, to be Yahusha is to know that you know already what's going to befall all nations of this earth. You already have your plan and what your duty is. It's already mapped out for you, so you know. And but you still have to be around people who are just outright ignorant of who you are. Imagine you walk into a room. You know you're the best person for the job. You know that in a couple of years, you're going to be the president of this company. You know this. Before you walk in the room, this is what you know. You also know who your enemies are. You know those who are going to stand up against you being the president of this company. You know what they believe. You know where they work. You know what their powers are, what they can and can't do. But you still have to be in this room for a time. Could you honestly say, and I want to hear you in the comment section, could you honestly say that if you walked in this room, you would be able to keep your composure when these people you know, these people who you know are going to try you every step of the way in your qualifications and what you say to them, are you going to be able to keep your composure to be able to answer them with little and with a tone and with an understanding that you don't know what you're talking about, that they don't know what they're talking about, but you do? Could you keep that same tone without attitude, without being petty, without vindictiveness? Would you be able to do that? I know I would fail maybe 9 times out of 10. I know that. I know I would fail 9 times out of 10. You put me in a room. If I walked in a room, I know all my enemies are there and I know my qualifications and I'm sent to do a job. I would be able to do it around 5. If it was 50 people, you gave me 5 people that already tried me, I would be faltering at the 6th, 7th, 8th person. By the time I get to the 20th person, I'm just swinging. At that point, I'm just swinging. But Yahusha walked in there knowing his purpose was to die at the hands of these people, but still give enough understanding, knowledge, and teaching for us generations later to understand his purpose. If you walk into a situation or opportunity that you know you're going to be talked about, you know you have enemies, would you not walk in to the situation with the same mindset that I'm setting up future generations if I go this route? Now, I'm just talking about your personal life or whatever you desire or whatever expectations you have for your family, that you know you have to go through this path, a righteous path, and you know you're going to have enemies to be a stumbling block and a snare to you. What can we do? How can you learn to have a composure like Yahusha? I mean, the answer is simple if you read his parables. If you read how he interacted. But sometimes we forget that he was told everything that was going to befall him and befall this world, that knowing this, it wasn't like he went into and just like, oh, these people, oh, they don't know anything. They have little faith. It's like he didn't know. He knew. He knew exactly who he was around. He knew exactly what type of people wouldn't believe him. He knew our people were just as foolish as the people that he was trying to teach. And still be able to have a type of composure, a type of understanding, and a type of heart to really get him in a way that when you read, or if you read him generations and thousands of years later, You could try to join within his body, walk within his laws, walk within his mind, his heart, his path. To be able to truly fully understand his sense of righteousness and salvation. And know the trials and tribulations that he faced, we were going to face. He says this, I send you out as sheep among wolves. The church don't think it has enemies. The church thinks its enemy is Hollywood. But most times the enemy is within yourself. The enemy is where you end up because of your haughtiness, your pride, your ego. You create your own enemies because the way you walk, because the way you are, because of what you hold on to. To have that Yahushua mood is to actually know who you are and what your purpose in this life is. That's a mood in itself. When you know this mood, you don't react to everything. When you know and have this mood, you know how to deal with confrontation. You know how to deal with opportunities that are taken away from you. You know how to be in the presence of your enemies and not falter. Knowing this will save a lot of us heartache and grief. When Yahushua said, the path is narrow and there be few that find it, he walked a very, very, very slim path in a very short time. Some of us are older than Yahushua right now. But he understood this at a very young age. I mean, like I said before, his father is Yahuwah himself. And we, our fathers, are men of flesh. Our traits, our genetics, how we're built, come from our parents. Our parents, because of the curses, have walked in ignorance for some time or are still in ignorance. The curse of not pardoning the sins of the father, but adding them to the fourth and fifth generation of them that hate him. We've all felt that. But the way that we get out of that mentality is not be a victim of it. Not say, oh, my father was a cheater, so it's okay for me to cheat. My father was a liar, so it's okay for me to lie. My father was a drunkard or a womanizer, so it's okay for me to be these things. I'm just walking in my bloodline. My father was a Gemini, or my father was a Capricorn. So this is the way I act because he comes from this, and my mother is this, and this has allowed me to be this way. Over time, you convince yourself that this is what you are. Over time, pride and ego will convince you that this is what the Most High made you to be. Again, this comes from walking in this world and thinking your purpose is whatever this world has told you or wanted you or perverted you to be. Being in that Yahushua mood is finally coming to the realization of who you are as a person, what your purpose is in this life. And how, in this purpose, can you walk with a sense of knowing and a sense of understanding to know where you should be in this walk? A lot of people get in this walk and say, oh, I'm a babe in this walk. I just have a mustard seed. As if babies don't grow up. And if mustard seeds don't grow. I implore people to really look in the mirror. I'm not just talking to you. I'm talking to myself as I look at this IMAX screen. To see what your true purpose is. And then you react to that purpose. When you don't have a purpose, you don't think you have a purpose, you react to everything, trying to search out the validity of your purpose. When you know your purpose, you have given a work to do. You are the overseer of that work. So if the work falls through your hands, as sand falls through your hands, you can blame nobody but you. When your plans fall through, when you stumble in your blessings, you can blame nobody but you. It ain't your parents. It ain't this country. It ain't your political party. It ain't your religion. It's you. And the only cure for that, like Yahusha, is knowing who the Father is. Taking the spotlight off yourself and put it on the Father, which is what Yahusha did. He says, I can do nothing if not by the hand of my Father. Me alone am nothing, but it's the Father that helps me do these things. Do we ever think that way? Do we think what we do or how we interact with people in this life say, oh, this is what the Father wanted me to do? This is what the Father wants me, has given me power to do. If you looked at it and thought of it that way, a lot of you would stop the foolishness that you would do. You would stop doing and being the things that you are. He has given us a role, a purpose, a job, a mission for all of us. Regardless of where we are in our walk, he has given us a mission and a purpose. The only one that screws that up is the person who has not looked at himself in the mirror. And what we do, we try to fill up or blind ourselves with overlearning, overteaching. Yahusha did none of those things. Yahusha felt what he needed to feel at a time of feeling. What I mean by that is, when it was time for Yahusha to be taken away and arrested, and he knew that his hour had come where he was going to be crucified, he went to be vulnerable to the Most High, his Father, knowing that this cup has been given to him, knowing he must drink this cup, knowing. He still was nervous and having anxiety about it. But that did not deter him from his purpose. He even says, take this cup of trembling away from me. But not my will, your will be done. Do we pray and say, take this cup from me? Because we wanted it taken from me? Because we don't want to go through correction. We don't want to go through straightening our crooked paths. Do we say, oh, please fix it. Fix everything. I don't want to go through this. Take it away from me. But we don't finish that up with, let your will be done. We think our will to be done is for us to always be at peace, always be in joy, always be happy, always walking lighted afoot, receiving little or no correction. We believe this when we get into this walk. We think this walk is we walk into a door and it's sunshine and rainbows, never ending. It could be. It most certainly could be. But more or less, what turns that into a cloudy day or a rainy day is our own pride and ego. Some of us are going to find out that our purpose could be, just like Yahusha, is to be arrested and thrown in jail for the word, for defending the word, for walking in the Torah. When Satan comes down in the book of Revelation, said he has war with the remnant and those who keep the commandments. If you are not prepared for this type of war, stay your butt on the porch. And even then, like Yahusha said, even if you stay on the porch and have nothing and have not accumulated for yourself works of righteousness, walking in the path of peace and joy and looking at yourself in the mirror, if you know, even if you don't want to do any of these things, you just want to sit on the porch, even the porch, which is nothing, will be taken away from you. So this walk forces you into a place of being uncomfortable, just as Yahusha was put in a place of being uncomfortable around people who know nothing, that sought to kill him and persecute him at every turn. But he knew that his purpose was protected by the Father himself. Just as you are protected by the Father himself to walk in your purpose, to make sure, like he says, I have begun a work in you and I will see it to completion. So when you're walking in the midst and land of your enemies, your purpose is not yet fulfilled. Until it's being fulfilled, you are being protected. There is a hedge about you being a protection to you until you fulfill your will, or fulfill, again, being corrected, his will. His will is not for you to dwell in the nature of your flesh. His will is in his covenants. His will is what he wants for you, your role for you, your mission for you. When you take you up out of his will, that paradise is waiting for you. That joy, peace, and happiness you seek, if you take you away from yourself and walk in his will, like Yahusha said, all those things will be added unto you. If that's what you seek. If you seek something only he can give to you, then it's by his will that you receive it. If you just want it for yourself, for your own ways, it'll be a struggling block for you, because you're doing it not in his will, you're doing it in yours. Yahusha did nothing for himself or of himself. He did it because he knew it was his Father's will. That is the mood. And to speak for myself, that is what I'm learning from Yahusha and his parables. My mouth gets slick, so I be quiet. Y'all know my mouth gets slick. Almost to a point, I seek out confrontation, because that's, like I said, my purpose in this world was to be paid off organized confrontation. So when my ruach is set, my emotions are set to be combative. But reading the parables, reading the scriptures, little bit at a little bit, that is being purged. That is being taken away. I overreact to things because I like to be confrontational or combative. Doing so, you find yourself in wars and battles that you yourself don't need to fight. I realize that part is draining after a while. Once I understood to pick my battles, and that's what married men have been telling me, or just my father in general, been telling me since I was born. Telling me to pick your battles, pick your battles, pick your battles, pick your battles. And because I was in my rebellious phase and combating everything, I wanted to go to war with everything. I believe that I was sharpening my sword through every battle I felt I had to fight. doing that too much, you eventually build up your own ego and thinking, I am undefeated. I cannot be built. I mean, I cannot be broken. I cannot lose. I cannot be brought down. And over time, the Most High will catch you and he will break you down. He will humble you. He will give you a mission and a purpose. He won't even change everything about you. And I'm just talking for myself. He was like, this young man, this man that I know, that I formed in his mother's womb, I know he's going to come out like a firecracker. If I can only purge him of his fleshly desires for war and conflict, and if I give him a mission, I give him a purpose, his greatest attributes, which have been toxic to him, I will form them, mold them, for him to be a glittering wet sword for me once I give him this mission, once I give him this purpose. You ain't the only one that was like, yeah, I believe this is who I am. Especially when my zodiac sign is of November. I took that to the most serious doctrine that you could take it. If they said my sign was being vindictive, wrath, unforgiving, I nurtured that. But the Most High looked at me and gave me mercy and long suffering and said, you know what? It's because his purpose in this world, he knows me. He knows me not. Because of his purpose in this world, he has not known me yet. But I'm going to put him in a situation and an opportunity for him to know me. I'm giving him this grace, this mercy, this long suffering so he can know me. Because I know exactly what he's going to do for me once I give him this mission, once I give him this purpose. But I must first take things away from him. I must leave him with nothing so then I can give him everything. I really want that walk for y'all. I really do. And the reason why I tell you my walk is so you don't have to go through the trials and tribulations and the humility of it. But I think it's just some of y'all's burden to go through these things, that you have to reach a type of humility and a type of embarrassment and shame and reproach for you to say, you know what? I don't know nothing. Please, Most High, cut me up with your words. That's what I did. You know what my first prayers were? My first prayers were, I'm stupid. I know nothing. Forgive my father. Forgive my generations before me. I am completely ignorant and stupid of your ways. Cut me with your words. And I didn't say this prayer once. I said this prayer a couple of times. I told the Most High, cut me up with your words. I don't need to be cut up. Purge me. And so, yes, I went on a path of being humiliated. And it wasn't being humiliated to people around me or to my friends. It was a humiliation that me and the Most High understood. When he knows you need to be humbled, it would be an internal thing. It'd be a situation, opportunities only you and him know about. He's not going to embarrass me on the grand stage, because that's not where he is. He's not going to embarrass me in front of my enemies. He embarrassed me where only him and his angels saw it. And I felt it as if that embarrassment was on ESPN or SportsCenter. That's how it felt. But I wouldn't be able to feel these things and know these things if I was too busy walking in my ego, pride, my haughty-mindedness, and reacting to everything. I stopped being a busybody and just sat in that place. I don't know if they call it rock bottom, but I sat in that place and just allowed to feel embarrassed and shamed, and knowing it came from me and me alone. The Most High showed a mirror and said, okay, this is what you are. But he also showed me, this is what I could be. I'm going to be with you, but I want you to see this. I want you to look in the mirror. This is what you are. Now, I'm going to show you where you should be and where you could be. And that's how most of us, I think, started this walk. This is why he raised up men that are not in religion. He didn't call Christian pastors to do a damn thing. Because as you see, everybody on that stage or that platform is walking not in humility, a false sense of humility, false modesty, false empathy, false righteousness, false holiness, and false doctrines. You need that to keep up with the lies that you tell yourself. You run to and fro to not think about the lies you tell yourself. You jump in and out of situations, in and out of relationships, because you don't want to believe the truth. You want to listen to the lies you tell yourself. It's not enough that we know who the Father is. It's not. It's not enough to know just who the Father is. But it's to know ourselves too. We know exactly what we pray for. And we know how slick we can pray for it. We can pray to steer the situation away from us. We can pray to steer it to go over us, underneath of us, beside us. But we will never pray for that situation to go through us. Sometimes it needs to go through you for you to truly understand. And sometimes the Most High is like, nah, I'm not moving this for you. You go through it. You the one that did it. You go through it. You set your foot in this direction. Go through it. Just as he told his son, maybe not told him, you know, in scriptures. But he told him, this is my son who I am well pleased. But you're going to take this cup and you're going to drink of this cup. You're going to walk in my will, even unto death. But you know, even unto death, you know you're going to be resurrected. You know you're going to be up here with me. You know in this very short time, you're going to be up here with me for all eternity. There is nothing to tremble about. There's nothing to have anxiety over. That is the mood. That is the strength. That is the understanding of who your Messiah is. Ain't nothing wrong sweating buckets of tea. Sweating buckets to the point it looks like blood dropping from your face, as it mentioned in scripture. There's nothing wrong with having anxiety. But let that anxiety, let that weakness be short-lived. Short-lived because you know in the long run what your purpose is, what your mission is, and who your Father is. See y'all next week.